Hello, I am Katrina Collier, and as part of my mission to inspire all the people that recruit people to treat people better, I bring you the Hiring Partner Perspective Unedited podcast. Here, you will hear from those hiring leaders who create true partnerships with recruiters, HR, and talent acquisition because they know that it delivers a better result for the business and a better human experience. May this podcast inspire other hiring leaders to create better partnerships with their recruiters and HR. And may it inspire recruiters to create true and valuable partnerships with their hiring leaders. Because people make businesses succeed and people matter. So let us begin. Sarah Burgess, welcome to the Hiring Partner Perspective podcast, proudly supported by the wonderful people at WorkDrive. Welcome, welcome.
Hi. It's so nice to see your face.
It's so nice to see your face, because no one listening can see us.
But I feel like we're special. I know. I feel like we're special. We get to see faces.
It's so lovely. It's a feature in Zencastr, and it really does make it easier to actually have the conversation.
Yeah.
Because you get, oh no, smiling, all of that. Yeah. You and I have actually known each other since my really baby days in my company, actually, when I came and did some training when you were at Fletcher.
I was trying to work this out. Was it like 2014, 2015?
I think so.
Yeah. And then you came and slept at my house and everything.
I know. It's like client invites you to stay at their house. How well do I have to behave?
Drink
here?
Martini.
We did not behave.
No, we did not behave. But
give the listeners a bit of a background into what you've done, because I knew you obviously as a HRD, but...
Yeah.
Snapshot of your career.
Okay. So I suppose I probably have like a secret career and like a real life career. So I've been like a qualified, it's really not like a superhero vibe at all. No. So I qualified as a business psychologist back in 2010, which is like a really, really long time ago. But I only actually really practiced as one in like the last 5 years. So I've mainly been in learning and development. HR, obviously, is head of people director, where I met you. And in my current role now as sort of senior L&D for All Saints. But I also did sort of like a three and a half year stint as an actual practicing business psychologist, because, you know, you kind of go to uni, you spend all this money, you put all this effort in, and you think, maybe I should try and be one for a little bit and see what that's about.
So you're the only person I know who's doing something related to their actual degree, other
know,
than obviously
right?
doctors and lawyers.
Yeah. I know. I got there in the end.
Completely different.
I know. I got there in the end.
So it was quite hilarious, because before I hit the record button, I said, so what does a business psychologist do? And you said, I'm going to Google it.
I'm actually
so
going to Google it.
Say
so
you
I have just Googled prior to this call, this conversation, what is a business psychologist? And the first thing that pops up of 73 million results is, business psychologists are independent professionals who are employed to offer unbiased and objective data regarding people and workplace issues, such as employee engagement, succession planning, and staff retention. Their advice will be based on years of research and scientific rigor.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that, because I do, if anything, over the last year and a half, I have really learned to embrace my inner nerd, my inner geek, and I'm really enjoying it. So
is
I'll take that.
Is that because your company has allowed you to as well?
Oh, 100%, 100%. I think...
Because this is like your dream job, isn't it?
I mean, is
you
my
love
dream
fashion
job.
And you've ended up in L&D in fashion. I mean, that's...
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think my first L&D role was with Mango, which is also a very cool brand, and enabled me to kind of travel and spend quite a lot of time in Spain and stuff, which was really awesome. And yeah, it's like some people have said to me, oh, do you feel like you've gone backwards or gone sideways or anything like that? And I said, no, I feel like I've done like the full circle of life. I'm literally back in my heartland. And All Saints, oh my gosh, like iconic. I have to say, I'm pretty much living my best life in black. I'm not today, because I'm trying not to. But yeah, just, oh man, yeah, it's just so fantastic to be back in retail. And also, yes, definitely with a business that really values my inner psychology geek 100%. And that's been so great to kind of weave that into everything that I've been able to do over the last 12 months, especially within a pandemic, because we've had so much stuff around resilience, well-being, and being able to kind of actually fall back on a bit of an evidence base. And I actually went and did a bit of extra training actually around sort of like the solid psychology behind resilience and such, just again so I could confirm to myself that I knew what I was doing, which was quite helpful.
I mean, if there was ever
really
a year to discover what depths of resilience you had, that was last year.
Definitely. Definitely, yeah. Definitely. You know what? I was doing a talk last week at a sort of HR conference, and I got caught completely off guard because I was talking about all the great things that we'd done as a brand for our teams around resilience and sort of sharing some of the training that we've been doing. Mm. And I got caught completely off guard by someone who said to me, "All right, so do you always put your oxygen mask on first, and do you always look after you first?" Nope. And I was like, no, not really. And you know what? Because I was caught off guard, I ended up being like probably quite exceptionally honest. I was just like, look, you know what? I think I've just muddled through as best as anyone else can. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't think I've done it any better or any worse. I don't think anybody has been better or worse. I think that's been a lot of perception, actually, of like other people have done like the pandemic better than others. It's like, nah, we've all just kind of muddled through, I think.
I think that's some of the problem, and some of that problem that comes from social media, doesn't it? About the perception of how we actually are handling it compared to how we are actually handling it. So it's always fun. Now, you came up with brilliant. I just nearly took my head off with the cable.
Don't do that.
I know, it would be really fascinating. Nobody would understand why I suddenly went quiet. you came up with the best topic for this because obviously I'm wanting to interview hiring managers, but when I can't, I'm getting experts like yourself in to talk around a topic that will help with that partnership between recruiters and hiring managers, because I think if we can fix that and the one with HR, we can really start fixing the candidate experience problem. Now, you came up with managing disappointment, which I just think is brilliant, but I want to know more. Spill the beans. Okay. What do you mean by managing disappointment? How does that all fit in the picture?
Well, do you know what? I think because when you asked me to come on this, I was thinking, okay, so what is Katrina all about? What is she really going to value? And, you know, what's going to be my kind of vibe on this? And I always go back to that same phrase you always say, which is be human, be more human. Don't be, you know, robot proof, you know.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of the first things that came to my mind. And with that also comes, well, being human also means being human, as in human. The kind of stuff that makes us a little bit more fallible. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like our emotions, perceptions.
Not putting your gas mask on first.
Yeah, not gas mask. Oxygen mask.
It is a gas mask, is it not?
Well, it depends on the context of why you're wearing a gas mask, I guess.
Whatever they say on the plane. See, it's been that long since I've got on a flight.
What is travel? So it got me thinking.
How much I don't listen when they're saying it as well.
So it just really got me thinking about, well, to actually be more human and be robot proof, actually, we also kind of need to be quite aware of what that means for us as humans. Like you say, we're, you know, humans are fallible. We're not perfect. We're not robots. And that's the whole point. Mm. And I thought, oh, we could talk about listening and all that kind of stuff. And I just thought, you know, what would be really cool is actually a lot of what comes out in those kind of relationships is expectations. So I thought you were going to get with this quality, or I thought you were going to do this by this time. And it just made me really think about, okay, well, actually what you're managing there is disappointment as well. And I thought that'd just be a dead interesting topic to dive into with you from a recruitment point of view.
Because, well, actually, to be fair, I think the vast majority of the entire recruitment process is managing disappointment, which sounds dreadful. You know, you get in 100 applications and you're going to hire one person. That's a lot of rejecting. But you are more talking about like between the hiring managers and recruiters.
Yeah.
Or really in any because situation. But you said something interesting before we came on about how we have this internal like love of who we're really looking for. So this ideal that may or may not be realistic.
And then, I mean, think of it.
That disappointment as well.
Because I mean, think of it in your personal life. You know, the who in your personal life is it can be pretty terrifying, really, because it's that, you know, think about this whole idea of the one, you know, we meet the one person that's perfect for us, our soulmate, that we're going to love forever. There's only this one person that's ever going to fulfill our desires, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
It's unrealistic expectation we
have. Well, potentially, because, you know, again, people are people. And, you know, it's thinking about actually when you're trying to get clarity around that can be quite difficult, because what does that actually mean? And it was funny because I was talking about this in work in a training session last week, and they were saying to me, yeah, but how does this even apply to work? And it's like, well, how do you want to feel about the relationships that you're having at work? Have you thought about that? And it's like, well, no, they're just work people. And it's like, well, no, it's a relationship. Maybe it isn't the kind of, am I going to fall in love with them forever? Am I going to, you know, live in our kind of, you know, white picket fence? Kind of vibe, that kind of thing. But there's something about, there is a key about knowing how you want to feel in relationships and focusing on that instead of how you think the other person should be. Do you know what I mean? It's that, so there's an element of, if I'm a hiring manager and I have, and we all have perceptions and stuff, you know, we'll have worked with recruiters in the past, we may have recruited ourselves, you know, and all this kind of stuff. So we have a bit of, we have that already, that perception. So that's the other kind of human part of it. But actually it's that, you know, so we get an idea of how that person should be. So you may want to feel,
it's like, how do I want to feel?
Yeah, how do I feel? So you may want to feel at ease, you know, interested, engaged, you know, that this person's doing the right thing for you. So we sometimes find ourselves thinking they should be interested in me and engaging with me and doing what I need them to do. Rather than actually, like, am I actually showing that myself? It's like, this is what I want. This is what I want. This is what you should do. But actually, A, have I asked for it? B, am I showing that I'm open to myself? Yeah. You know what I mean?
I hear that
often. It's a simple shift in intention.
Yeah. It's people make assumptions instead of, so I would like ease, but they don't explain the process to gain ease.
Yeah.
This is my expectation of you. This is my expectation of what I'll deliver.
I just expect. I just expect that's going to happen based on what I think and what I want from it. But actually, if you're approaching the situation, what you want from that relationship, instead of what the other person should or should not be doing, for example, you know, please, you know, recruiter or hiring manager, see, you know, see how amazing I am at getting this goal. You know, it's that, well, actually, could you not kind of ask for it instead? Or, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? It's, you're reminding me of actually when I was going through my, I call it coaching therapy. Michelle Zelli will not call it that, but to undo my childhood trauma and stuff. And she would be talking about, like, you're choosing to feel that way. And the only person's, like, the only person you can control and the actions of is yourself. So if you're not changing your approach to the situation or changing how you feel, like, you're doing that. And this is, sounds like very much what you're saying here.
Yeah, because we can develop some pretty fixed ideas on what will make us happy or what the result that we want. And eventually we can almost kind of like train our minds to believe that we'll only be happy if it happens. That that one thing happens. So if this recruitment happens in that way, and then layer onto in the time that I think it should happen in, and at the level and quality I believe it's going to happen at.
Which is just a unicorn.
So, but this is the issue. So this is the human side of it. This is like, because we mistakenly believe that that is the thing that's going to make us happy in that situation. So if I get the perfect candidate that I believe is out there in the time that I think that's going to happen, in this relationship I'm going to have with this recruiter, for example, and we don't get it, then that's when you get the disappointment.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting is that research shows us that actually disappointment is a form of sadness. It's like it can, it feels like a feeling of loss or like an uncomfortable space or a painful like gap between our expectations and like what's really happening. And I think that's where, you know, sometimes we talk all the time about managing expectations, whether that's in sort of like client customer relationships or, you know, even from like development succession, you know, all that kind of stuff. But then do we actually really think about, well, okay, and it's always, isn't it, the kind of goal setting. So should, have I set objectives? So have I set really clear objectives for this recruiter for what I want for this role? Well, that's fair enough. But have you checked in on what your mind trained expectations are around the relationship, when it's going to happen, how it's going to happen and all that kind of stuff?
So actually, I don't think we talk about that. Expectations and disappointment. So this is our ideal expectation of how we're going to work together to fill this role. If this doesn't happen, how are you going to feel? And we, my God.
And what's really, really interesting is that research also tells us that there's no guarantee that if we get the things we want, we'll be happy. So even if that recruiter does everything that you've expected and wanted and, you know, but without giving them any, like all the things we've just been talking about, not actually doing any of that, there's quite a bit of evidence to say that you still won't be happy with the service. So from a service provider,
leave us all hanging like that. What do you need to do?
So actually, well, the trick is apparently because our satisfaction with things are very short lived. It's the whole like pay rise argument, isn't it? You know, when you get a pay rise and you're like, oh my god, I've got all this extra money, and then it literally takes like 3 months before you're skint again because you just you absorb it. Yeah, you shop at All Saints. And you look amazing in leather jackets when you're sat at home. brilliant. On a side, actually, I think I'm the only person that's actually got dressed in a full proper outfit every single day of this pandemic. I have not done the whole sweatpant thing, and people have literally said I'm mad. And I'm like, have I missed out? I don't know.
I would just like to say that I don't actually own sweatpants.
No.
Right. So I wear jeans, and you notice when your jeans are getting tight. I do that quite but I've been working from home for 11 years, so I already knew to do that.
Yeah, you have practice.
People are like 12 months into, oh dear, I wish I had been wearing jeans. But anyway,
So this is idea, satisfaction. Yeah, the satisfaction with stuff's really short-lived. So actually what we need to be trying to do is make that experience, you know, almost like we're enjoying what's happening in the moment. Yeah. So there's an opportunity there around, you know, communication between a recruiter and a hiring manager. It's like you might have some milestones in, but that might just be stuff like, oh, here's my long list, here's my short list, here's the interview, But then actually, is there any opportunity around communication to kind of encourage some satisfaction with what's happening all the way through, rather than the only satisfaction being at the end? Like the end is the only satisfaction.
Got you. So from a recruiter point of view, working with a hiring manager who has these expectations to avoid the disappointment is just to keep validating as we're going through. Hey,
yeah,
we're doing
keep
well with
in.
This. Keep checking in. How are we doing? How are we?
Yeah.
Because actually,
how are you that was a bit too psychologist, wasn't it? How are you feeling? How are you feeling about that? But yeah, but you know, I mean, yeah, okay, we don't have to go kind of like
it's funny,
you know, Freudian couch.
We do go logic, don't we, rather than going to the emotion. And it is an emotion based decision when it should be logical sometimes.
And again, if you're holding in the back of your mind that even if I do my best job and get the best outcome, this person might still, for whatever reason, based on their expectation, not be 100% satisfied.
Yeah.
Because it could be, you know, it's a really great outcome, but you could have, it'd been nice to have had a little bit more conversation. Oh, it'd been nice to have a little more, you know, I don't know.
No, I like that, the check-in. Because also the person that they're hiring is also human. So they could go through the whole expectation and hire the perfect unicorn and then they're not work out. And there's a whole other level of
disappointment. Yeah.
That comes in.
Definitely.
I mean, it just sounds like it all comes back to basics, doesn't it? Better communication, more frequent communication, being a bit more open, a bit more honest.
Yeah.
Check in. I love that check in.
Yeah. Check. I mean, and I think there's something again about that, our expectation of like how long things take. Because there's a lot to say that actually our expectation of how long things take are actually influenced by social norms. So it's like, well, what other people do, what I've seen other companies do. The last time I was over here, somebody else did that. So we kind of almost have this unspoken rule going on. And it's unspoken goals, and we kind of put our goals on this timeline. And it's funny, when we reach our goals quicker, we can still be quite disappointed by that, because it's almost like, oh, I thought it was going to take this long, but it hasn't. So again, it's that quick-lived satisfaction.
I think we do need to put them on the couch and give them a good talking to.
Maybe. Well, maybe that's the thing. Maybe this is the key thing now for recruiters is like, okay, what's going to be my like therapy couch moment in this relationship? Just to really get out. what's the kind of underlying kind of emotion behind stuff?
It's quite funny. I've really enjoyed that with the mastermind that I run. So that 12-month program I created from the Robot Proof Recruiter. Getting people to feel stuff. Because it's like, I can say, like I start with the module of trust, because, you know, recruiters have got to gain trust, they've got to have the hiring managers trust and so on. But it's getting them to feel it. And sometimes we're so disconnected because we're like, almost like your colleague said, well, you know, I'm work, so why would I want to feel anything about this relationship?
Yeah.
It's bizarre how we try and box ourselves off when we're...
And, you know, I still hear people saying things like, you don't go to work to make friends, and, you know, you go to work to work. And it's like, that's fine. But that feels almost kind of like, you know, when you talk about like robots, maybe not in terms of recruiting sense, but just robot in general, it's like, well, actually, all power to you for kind of going with that mindset of, I'm going to really focus on my job, my career, progression, whatever it might be. But actually, by kind of taking that approach, you're not going to get the best out of yourself or other people necessarily, because you're not managing expectations or perceptions or all that other kind of fun stuff that comes along with working with
human beings. You're more productive when you do enjoy the environment you're in. So
definitely.
And because I'm laughing, thinking, I was your client, we're now friends. And that happens with a lot of my clients as well. And again, I mean, I suppose I could go in going, oh, well, they're not going to end up being a friend. Not that I aim for that, it just happens. But yeah, strange, because, yeah, I think also if you do become closer, they can help you develop as well, because they'll be more honest with you than trying to shut yourself off in a...
Definitely, definitely. And I think, you know, just linking back to what you were saying then, it's like there's been plenty of times where I've like got in touch with you because I'm like, oh, I've got this question, or I'm just thinking about, or I need some advice on. And you're like, yeah, go for it. And then you're kind of the same kind of thing. So it's almost, it's friends, but it's networking. So there's something around also from a collaboration point of view. So sort of stepping off the therapy couch for a second. You know, we think about collaboration as the kind of, oh, you know, let's make sure all this, you know, schedules and timescales are aligned. You know, let's make sure we're really cooperating. You know, are we sharing the risk rewards of this situation? But actually, it's also your network. Like, how strong is the connection? So I value you as a friend. I also value you as a really like strong part of my network as well.
Same.
And it's, and because of that, we're able to collaborate. Because of that, we don't disappoint each other. I hope we don't disappoint each other too often. I think there's something there as well about that, I think.
Yeah, and also it's that thing where you're my person, my go-to person to ask for advice on XYZ. And if I ask you and you don't know, you would say, I don't know, but I know someone who does.
Yeah.
And that's that joy of the network.
Yeah.
Because we're so interconnected, all of us, that we can pass people on. And then you're not disappointing them anyway.
No.
But then that's quite interesting, because that's made me think about that sort of fear people have of saying, I don't know. And I think there's a lot of hiring managers who don't know when they're recruiting. They don't really know what they want. So, but you've added this whole other layer to it with the whole, actually in their mind, they're probably creating what we keep calling unicorns, because that's what recruiters.
But this is the thing. Like, and again, that's the kind of the how part of managing disappointment, because once we have something we need to do, our brain will automatically think of ways to do it, ways to go after it. And if we can't think of a good way to do it, we might give up or get a bit grumpy or be quite difficult to work with. And then we feel disappointed. Or we may go completely the opposite end of the spectrum and start developing like elaborate schemes for how we're going to get what we want. And that usually involves other people following a script we've written for them, or, you know, having a series of events that we kind of plot to unfold in a certain way. And that totally applies to that kind of recruiter hiring manager relationship, because it's this kind of, well, I expect to have a long list buy, I expect to have a short list buy. You said, you know, well, I think this is how it's going to happen. And if you're a recruiter, it's actually like, well, no, maybe I don't think that's the right way to do this kind of thing. Maybe we should do a bit of like a network event. Maybe we should kind of set up in your office and do a bit of a kind of show and tell, like open house kind of thing. But if I've got in my mind fixed, well, this is how it happens.
Yeah.
But I don't really know that. It's just my brain looking for certainty and like, this is how I know it's going to work. Then that could cause a bit of a, you know, like a bit of a butting of heads as well. And that's where potential disappointment.
Absolutely. And again, I think that's where from the get-go, from that the initial intake at the beginning of the process, that it's really for that recruiter to sit up and partner. And sort of say, oh, that's a brilliant idea. On top of that, have you thought of this? Like without detracting from what they've just said.
Yeah, it's almost like,
you know, I've experienced this has worked quite well. Would you be open to it? Like, you know, trying to gently ease them into a new way of
I think there's the opportunity is kind of not focusing on the end, but like the means.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I think sometimes it's that, especially if you think most organizations still very much have time to hire as a KPI, like how long does it take to fill this vacancy? How long has this vacancy been live? And that kind of automatically pushes mindset towards, well, that's success. That's the thing we're aiming for. When actually we might be missing out on some real kind of creative, innovative ways to do recruitment, because it's so much, okay, well, I'm waiting for I need the end bit. And this is what I've decided is how we're going to get there and what you're going to do for me. So yeah, you're right. It's, is that partnering, or is that just like a more of a service?
Yeah. Exactly. And also, if you, in my humble opinion, if you focus on time to hire, then what you're just going to make sure you fill it fast with somebody, not the person that's really the right person for that role and going to help the organization.
Yeah.
It's complicated.
But then again, you know, from a hiring manager perspective, you know, you then get into that argument of like that quantifiable KPI, isn't it? You know, boards want KPIs, and it's like, well, I just want to measure how well we're partnering and being creative in our recruitment process. It's like, okay, yeah, I can't put that in a spreadsheet. So that can, again, but then that's that kind of one of those fixed views of this is how it has to be.
But then if you go back to the evidence of perhaps you get more referrals that way, you get more retention, they stay, they don't, it's not failed recruitment, maybe measuring that, because really it's really the output, isn't it? How fast they come in and are up to speed and are being productive rather than, oh, well, we got them in fast or slow. I mean, like either or, whichever way you're going. Oh, we're not going to fix it. It's not today anyway.
Do you know what? I'm literally sat here going, oh, there's that can of worms. Let's just jump in there, like swim around a bit. Oh,
there's another book coming. I obviously am going to have a chapter on managing disappointment in there now.
Do you know what? I think because you hear it, whether it's in learning development, HR, recruitment, all about partnering. And it's, I'm still, in my experience, not 100% sure that, you know, people, we are partnering, and I don't mean in terms of All Saints. I just mean in general.
Sort of
the fact that you're asking me on here to talk about this stuff says to me, oh, there's an interest in the fact that that's still not happening.
Yeah, it's not happening. I think people are in silos, and it's there's a bit, to me, there's a big issue in recruitment because people have often come into the in-house role from the agency, so they've still got a service attitude, and agents obviously have a service attitude rather than going no. I'm going to help you fill this with the right person and we're going to do it together. And I think whether they're in-house or agency, they really should sit up and demand the partnership. They're seen. Like you mentioned at the beginning, you know, people are like running things through filters, aren't they? So they're like, oh, this is my perception of what a recruiter is like because this is the experience I've had with them.
Yep.
And we're wanting something a bit different. So they're almost expecting disappointment from the get-go. Sometimes, which is not great. And I just, that's what I mean with the attitude shift. That's what I've seen through the mastermind, through the facilitation I do, just getting there. But we just need to come out of silos. But it's the same, I mean, with HR as well. It's the same. They can also, in their part of the process, if they're not seen as, we're all together working to fill this role with the right person who's for the benefit of the company, then we have
Yeah, I agree. And I see it in training and development as well. It's kind of, oh, we'll do a training session for that. And it's like, why? What's the actual? And then you often find what I say to my team now is actually listen, don't be like, oh, for God's sake, we're being asked to do something else, or actually that's an extra thing, or why you already have this in this format kind of thing. It's like, just listen, because actually often what people think they want isn't quite what they want. You know what I mean? And it's, I wonder if there's a real opportunity for some, a bit of therapy couch, but also maybe that kind of coach approach as well. It's like some nice big open questions and then just listen to them and see what that's about. But I think, there's influencing in there as well, because like you say, it's that I need this done by a certain time, or I want this person in post. And actually, again, what the research is saying to us is that it's the process that gives us the most satisfaction, not the end result. So even when we think of like setting time scales for stuff, we will set our internal kind of time clock for something, and often those time scales, because they're self-imposed, are often unrealistic. So we just give up, or we get discouraged, or we shout at the said recruiter for not doing what we think they should be doing. But then obviously, as we said, we haven't actually told them like how we expect them to talk to us.
And what we
thought they were going to be like.
Which goes into that intake of asking those questions. Like you said, open questions. How do you need me to be? What are your expectations of me? And then maybe need to pull into line. Obviously, we don't want it to be ridiculous. But that's where, you know, if a recruiter's done all of their research before they go into the meeting, they understand the marketplace, that sort of stuff, they should be able to talk with a level of expertise from their own recruitment experience and understanding the market and the company.
No, definitely. And I think there's definitely a real opportunity around what is the process, like the kind of the middle bit look like, rather than the kind of, oh, we've got the engagement, oh, we've been chosen, we're going to do it. And then, you know, and the, oh, we've hired the person, woohoo, it's finished. Actually, what does that bit in the middle look like? You know, how am I checking in? Like you're saying, those kind of check-ins, how am I checking in with that hiring manager to understand where their expectations are sitting? And is there any disappointment brewing? because the hiring manager may not realize it's brewing. Do you know what I mean?
I might not be aware of it. We're also just checking in just to chase them for stuff. Give me feedback on the CV rather than.
How is this
falling in line with your expectations? What an easy question. What were you expecting? What are you not seeing?
What would you expect by now? What are you not, or, you know, that kind of who point, you know, what are you not seeing in me, or what are you seeing in me? Like, what do you want me to do more of? What do you need me to do less of? How is my communication with you? Am I finding you interesting enough? You know, maybe not that one, that's weird. But we're not on a dating site. But like, we're not kind of falling into that, like, oh, I found my one. See, you never know now. There might be recruiters who find their one true loves in hiring managers as a result of trying to manage disappointment.
You never know. So career. Hiring manager, matchmaker.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Could you imagine? No.
Yeah. I was just trying. Yeah, the millionaire matchmaker, better watch out, right? Hot on her heels.
Totally. Sarah, that has been absolutely amazing. If people would like to connect with you, is LinkedIn the easiest place? Or
yeah, LinkedIn, or you can find me on Twitter, Sarah Jane Syke.
Sarah Jane Syke. Without a H, Sarah without
Sarah
a
with
H.
Sarah with no H, yeah.
Yes, so obviously Syke has a H. But anyway, I'm just not going to go there. with my spelling today, it's not happening.
It's all right. It's been a long week and a lot of thunderstorms. So
I know, it's a crazy, crazy weather. We didn't have April showers, we're having them in May.
Yeah.
So, but it's all good fun. Thank you as ever. The most wonderful conversation. Thanks.
Oh,
Sarah.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so grateful for the opportunity. And it's just been really nice to kind of have some thoughts and follow them wherever they've gone, actually.
Yeah.
It's been really nice to go, well, I wonder what about that as well. Yeah, I could talk to you for hours.
Wouldn't it be amazing though if we just did spend more time being curious about our reactions and just our thinking and
curiosity, I think, is definitely a skill or a mindset or a, you know, whatever you want to kind of frame it as, something that we should definitely all spend a lot more time developing or looking after, definitely.
Yeah. That'll also go in the new book. Anyway.
It's all right. I fully know that you will cite me appropriately in the appropriate places. So
absolutely. I still love Melanie Silverman, who calls herself Silverman Melanie 99 from having been in the first book. She literally went straight to the index to find herself and refuses to be called anything else. I love it.
I love that.
I'll have you in there as well. Burgess Sarah 99. Anyway, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for listening to the Hiring Partner Perspective Unedited podcast, proudly supported by the people at WorkDrive. Hopefully you really enjoyed what you heard and have left feeling inspired. And if so, I would love your help to create real change. Please pass this podcast on to your hiring leaders and other recruiters and HR. Even share it on your social channels if you feel so inclined. But the more reach we can get, the more change we can create. So please remember to subscribe, of course, on your favorite podcast platform. And do come and say hello at Hiring Partner Perspective on Instagram, where I share behind the scenes of what's going on. Until next time, thank you.
Welcome, change agents, to your go-to place for stories that ignite your spirit, fuel your purpose, and connect us all. We believe in the incredible power of the human spirit, its boundless resilience, and the inspiration it brings to our lives. On the Driving Change podcast, we'll journey together through the extraordinary yet very relatable experiences of some of the most amazing people on earth. Our mission? That through these stories, we might just spark change within you and awaken a newfound motivation to harness your unique gifts to make a real difference in the world. So get ready to be inspired and join us on this incredible adventure. You can find the Driving Change podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you love listening to your favorite podcasts.